Kivisard Reel 16. We'd got to the point where you were in Greece and you'd gone forward to see the colonel who was in Athens, and your driver had been cut by flying glass. So,
yes.
What happened next?
Well, the colonel said that the Italian's job was to hold the coast road. This was the main road into Athens from Piraeus, where the 2nd Fleet of Esters were ahead of the battle. And he said that he wanted me to form a quarter company into a defence organisation, because he thought that down at battalion headquarters there could well be attacks coming in, especially at night time. So I've gathered together a lot of various bodies who were not really accustomed to bearing arms. The orderly room quartermaster sergeant and his orderly room corporal and several private soldiers who served in the orderly room. I dug them out. I got the pioneer platoon up and took the axes out of their hands and put rifles in. And I got some members of the RAP was getting itself ready for work in case necessary. But I got hold of as many people as I could, and I formed a unit of about 40, you know, odds and sods. And we set up a defensive position around battalion headquarters. I don't know how effective it could have been, but in fact we had that very same night, we did have an attack on battalion headquarters.
Now, what was the situation? Where was the battalion headquarters?
It was down along the coast road, close to the Blue Cross Hospital. And there was an attack on battalion headquarters. Came in at nightfall, and we made a fairly good response, actually, because we were overarmed. I mean, almost every man had either got a tommy gun or a friend, because, of course, the quartermaster was with us, and he had a lot of spare arms ready for replacement. So we put up a lot of firepower for a very few men. And somebody afterwards said it was a bit like Beaugest, where you know, had the soldiers up against the wall, although they were dead. Anyway, the attack was driven off, but I recall that there was a colossal explosion one time, and it wasn't our headquarters, but it was a house 2 or 3 doors away. I imagine it must have been an ammunition dump of some kind, but whether we were responsible for setting it off or whether it was just clumsiness on the part of the people handling it, I don't know, but when we came out the following morning, the whole of that house had totally disappeared, and there was a gaping hole in the ground.
Now, this from Laurie Stringer's book would seem to be the 13th of December that this took place.
Is that as late as that? That fits the description.
Yes. But
well, it must have been, but there was an attack on battalion headquarters, I remember, and that seemed to be followed by this enormous explosion. After that, it was a question of, defensive, as far as I was concerned, although the adjutant had been wounded, and the colonel asked me to act for him for a few days until he could replace him. So, along this coastal road, the railway ran behind, and there was two companies were clearing houses up and down the main road, because it was very difficult. In some cases, as soon as you cleared the house, or thought you'd clear the house, it was reoccupied. And as you were clearing houses further down the road, you were fired on from the rear. And in other cases, you'd gone in, and people had been there, but they looked totally innocent, some of them quite elderly. But as soon as you sort of passed them and checked the house for weapons, there again you found that there were people on the roof firing at you. So it was a totally confused situation. I've never known anything like that before. You couldn't tell friend from foe. And we tried to move to clear these houses. That was the first house. And I remember that we tried to secure the back gardens of those houses, because the CO wanted to move towards the railway. I don't remember too clearly when we got to the railway, but I know we did get to it. There was a very big battle going on further down that railway line at the station in Piraeus, which was Comonos or some name like that, where the Leicesters were having a hard time. And we were told to try to secure our section of the railway line, and if possible, move towards Piraeus in that direction, where to take the pressure off. So I don't think we ever did get down that far. I don't have any clear recollection of what happened next.
Was there a problem in these circumstances? Were there innocent civilian casualties, would you say?
Yes, all the time. You see, the extraordinary thing was that some people were carrying on their normal jobs. There was the city of Athens never totally became a war centre. The civilian population, very numerous, a lot of people were trying as best they could to carry on their normal jobs, notwithstanding fighting and so forth going on around them, explosions and shell fire. They were still carrying on. And as a result of that, people tried to cross the road, and snipers would hit them, and they'd be left lying in the road. There was no ambulance, no civilian ambulance service. We used to recover people, bring them in to the regimental aid post, treat them as best we could, and then put them onto the jeep ambulance and take them to a hospital. The Blue Cross Hospital wasn't equipped as a casualty centre. In fact, a large part of the Blue Cross was turned over to animals. It was a veterinary centre. So it was a totally confused situation. Houses would be set alight and burn without any fire brigade putting them out, because there wasn't a fire brigade. And so you were very much on your own. And there were a lot of civilian casualties. It was very sad to see it.
Were there problems with the ERAS using civilians as cover, or, you know,
I didn't come across any cases of that. I'm sure that they were integrated within the civilian population. I think there's any doubt about that.
What precautions could you or did you take to avoid opening fire on the wrong people?
You couldn't really take them. All you could do was to fire back. You didn't initiate anything for fear of causing civilian casualties, and part of the orders we'd had were to treat the situation with kid gloves and not to do any harm or damage either to people or property that could be avoided. And I seem to remember that later on we got a commendation from Scobie for the gentle treatment that had been afforded to the population. The population, by and large, were very cooperative. As you cleared houses and went through, and my 40 boats lent a hand in that at one stage. The houses close to our headquarters, they moved either side and started house clearing, and they were invited to take refreshments and so forth. Refreshment was one of the big problems about the Greek campaign, because everywhere you went, that is where you were welcome, and you were welcome most of the time. You got garlands of flowers and masses of retsina. And I've seen quite a few fellows, slightly the worst for wear as a result of that. But that whole period is one which is very difficult to tie down. I know the Leicesters were having a tough time. And about this stage, at the bottom of the coast road, that is towards the Piraeus end, onto the coast road, Phalaran Bay, and the road out to Kalamaki Airport. I remember linking, we linked up with Essex. I remember there was Essex Regiment that linked up. I think they were territorials, First Fourth or something like that. And I can remember them. We linked up so that the road into Athens was secured, and the Essex came in and secured the road along by the bay, and the other direction towards Piraeus was where the Leicesters were. I have no real clear recollection after that. Before, we had a visit from Mr. Eden, and I think Mr. Churchill was there, although we didn't see him. And I'm not so sure that General Alexander didn't turn up. I think he did. But we were told to prepare ourselves for a visit from Anthony Eden. And I have pictures on that occasion of the officers standing in the row being introduced. And he went round, and armoured car, of course, because you couldn't move freely in the streets anywhere. Armoured car, he went round and he talked to them. And Eden, of course, had strong connections with County Durham through family. So, of course, he came from a mine-owning family, so he knew the DOI quite well. Christmas was a strange affair. The Leicesters had done a good job down in Piraeus, and they had been assisted quite a lot by the Greek Navy, who were loyal. And also, there was a Royal Naval destroyer, which had been pounding. I remember one of the Leicesters telling me that they found it very useful because it could get round the back of the Eless, who were hiding behind slopes on some a villa or a quilla or some a name like that. It was quite a tall hill by a cemetery. And the Navy were very helpful there because they put out a lot of fire on the far side of the hill and made life very difficult for these Eless chaps. Christmas was spent more or less where we were. As PRI, I managed to open up a honky-tonk. I think it was the only one working at the time. And we had music. I had the battalion's seven-piece septet. Drums, piano, guitar, saxophone, clarinet, and so on, plus our little mascot, the little seven-year-old Greek boy in natural costume. And they operated in this honky-tonk, and there were tea and wads, and a certain amount, but limited, of Greek wine. Not Ratsina, but a nice red wine. I remember getting in the cave with these red carboys. They kept all their wines in carboys. More like a chemist shop, you see, years ago. In Christmas, we had parties come down there, but you had to hold your ground because these Elas people were all the time moving, and I think they were getting ready for withdrawal. The organization which scared the living daylights out of the civilian Greek population was the KKE, the Kukure. If you mention Kukure, they froze, and I get the impression that this was a branch of ELAS, but I think it must have been similar to the SS. I heard a lot of very bad stories about the Kukure, how they had abducted people, and some of them were never seen again, how they had committed atrocities, and they were feared. Everywhere they went, they were feared. It's a very sad reflection, of course, that the ELAS organization, which was structured well, command headquarters, brigades, and so forth, had been trained and equipped by the British to harry the Germans in Greece. And so it was only after the Germans had pulled out from the vacuum existed that these people tried to seize control of the country, and that they had strong communist tendencies, whereas, for example, EAM, the political body, was monarchist. And it was a sad situation in many ways, because the ELAS used to use their bullhorns at night and shout out, "Tommy, Tommy, where are your friends? We were trained by your people," and so forth. And it was true, but not for the purposes that we were engaged in then. It was to make life difficult for a German invader, occupier. All the premises that one went into had been occupied either by units of ELS or by German units. I had some experience of following up the Germans. I mean, in Tunis, I went in, and La Goulette, I'd been in and seen the premises that they occupied. And there was graffiti all over the wall, and I could read the German graffiti, but it was mostly insulting about the Italians. But the ELS I couldn't read. The places were in very bad condition. The remnants of food were disgusting. They were dirty. They were not good soldiers, I don't think, in that regard. Certainly hadn't kept their bullets very clean. So Christmas passed out as best we could. But I think about this time, there was an ELAS withdrawal from this area. I know that Piraeus was more or less quietened down. Navy House seemed to be a great centre of activity. But I only heard by word of mouth because I didn't see the rest of us, not until later when we got to Patras. But I think Navy House was a centre of contention with quite a lot of opposition. But after Christmas, I don't remember a lot of change, except as I say, I think there was and generally that's withdrawal from the Farallon Bay area, from the coast road, from the main road into Athens and from Piraeus, I think Piraeus is quite about. There were some Gurkhas, Indian division, or some, certainly some, I'm not sure who it was, whether it was 4th Indian or who it was, I don't remember. And I think it was about the first week in January that we got orders to embark. And the battalion was stretched out. It's quite a job to, and they were relieved in their positions. Although by that time it was quietened down quite a bit. And we embarked, the Leicesters embarked, and we embarked, and we sailed. And I can remember it was my first trip through the Corinth Canal. And that was very interesting. And I've always been interested in Greece. When I was a young fellow of 18, I carried my Julius bag on an educational trip to Greece, and going all over the historical points. So revisiting the country at this time was interesting. And later on, I revisited most of these places on my own as a city. We arrived in Patras, and it was a strange situation. The Leicesters were with us. I think they were in a Polish, not sure what ship. Whether the Sobieski was with us, I can't remember. We moved in the Sobieski a great deal. She was Polish flag. Anyway, we landed first. The Leicesters lay off. They came on shore the next day. The place was held on our side by an Indian brigade. And it was the strangest thing I think I ever saw. On the quay side, there were two sort of welcoming parties. There was an Indian company, and the rest of the battalion and brigade was away behind them. And there was an ELAS welcoming party. And it seems, from what I could make out, that the Indians and the ELAS had been rather like an Alice in Wonderland quadrille. They'd both been there, each knew what the other was there for. Nobody had seemed to make contact. Although politenesses had been observed and courtesies, military courtesies. it was a large contingent of ELAS. I believe something like 1,500 of them were there, with more in the northern Peloponnesus, Achaia. Well, we naturally met up with the Indians, and after that we met up with the ELAS. And the following day, and I felt very glad about this, the Leicesters landed, because we all felt very exposed. There were a great many ELAS in the hinterland, and this 1,500 we've got were simply the troops who had been holding the town before the arrival of the Indians. The Indians must have felt very exposed, and I'm not surprised that they didn't take any offensive action to reject the ELAS from Patras. The following day, the Leicesters arrived, and orders came through that the ELAS were to evacuate Patras, capital of the Peloponnese. The orders were conveyed. Colonel Worrell, went to see the ELAS commanders and gave them the orders. They were most reluctantly received, and there was a tense time. Some hours elapsed after the. No ultimatum was set, no time limit was given. It was just that the instructions that we had from division, who were in the process of moving up, which was actually true, although it took a long time, was that they should evacuate the town. The weather was very bad. It was snowing. And behind Patras, there is a very high ridge of, well, they're not mountains, but they're very high hills, rocky hills. And the snow was deep on these, and it was behind there that the principal body of ELAS was encamped. Anyway, we were greatly relieved to see that there was movement among the ELAS without any shots being fired. And the following morning, they moved out and wound their way around through passes. The great advantage the ELAS had, they knew the country right at the back of their hand. We had no idea. We hadn't even got advanced intelligence maps, you see. They came through eventually, but we didn't have them when we set off. No idea. I can recall the colonel working off a child's street map when he there was a school on the coast road, and somebody found atlases and things in there, and they went into the orderly room, and the colonel, it was all he had. I mean, he didn't even have a map of Athens. Later they were provided by the I branch, but in Patras, I didn't have a map in Patras. I think the colonel had one. Anyway, then of course I think the Leicesters. This was the 8th, 9th of January, something like that. I think it was fairly quiet for the next day. After that, we had orders, the Leicesters were ordered, and us, we were both ordered, but the Leicesters leading, to go to Araxos, I think it was called. It was a small aerodrome. And I can remember that they set off, and our leading company was behind, and I was moving with battalion headquarters at the time. I don't know why, I can't remember. But I remember the rest of us, we were moving more or less with two companies forward, and two companies, and they were flanking. They approached us, they came to a place called Cato Achaia, I think it was, and they were held up. And I think there was only an ELAS company there. Anyway, I can recall there being Leicester's five mortars. And I'm not too sure that Sackville Field was around where there was some units of Sackville Field, because I can remember there was an artillery fire. Anyway, this castle of Kaya, strong point, was demolished. And we moved through the Leicester's because they were, had halted to deal with this. And we moved into this Araxos aerodrome. We were told to hurry because the Brigadier was due to land there. And we didn't want him landing in the middle of the US. So I can remember there was a great rush forward by carriers and jeeps and so forth. But the aerodrome was very lightly held and the resistance was brushed aside. And they were quite right because the Brigadier landed, I think, only about 4 or 5 hours after we'd taken the aerodrome. So he was there with his two battalions.
I think that's roughly speaking when the truce was signed.
Yes, I remember.
It was signed on the 14th, midnight.
Yes, it must have been. Yes, the truce. The truce was from. There was a line north and south in the Peloponnese. Pergamon and Argamon. Argamon on the Corinth side and Pergamon on the coast side. That was the, and they were ordered, the Elas people were ordered to remain south of that line, which meant they were bottled up, because that meant Corinth and the route to Athens, the sea route to Athens, was cut off. They couldn't make themselves a nuisance. So from Argos to Pergos, there was this invisible line running across. I can remember the King's Yorkshire Light Infantry, and I can remember Hampshire's. We were relieved, I think. I've got a feeling 139 was relieved by 138 about that time. 139, Horace's in Salonika. Leicester's and Durham's, with the Athens work and the Piraeus work, and then the Patras work had become a bit exhausted because it was a constant strain. There were no lines. I mean, we were accustomed to fighting with lines. You know, people held this point and that point and the other point. And here, you dare not even step out in the street. It was a constant tension. And I can recall 139 when it was relieved. 138, I think it was, they went in. And we moved back. And I think we moved back by road. I can remember marshalling, yes, I had to marshal the convoy. And I was the blue flag man. In the first three times, I went by three tunnels, the three tunnel route through Argos, through Corinth, which is a dreadful looking place, very modern and ghastly looking, and across the canal bridge and around the coastline. We had a very easy run there, and I rather wondered about that road run because it was a moving place. The hinterland of the Elas had occupied the ground, and moreover, we were moving into the southern area of the Peloponnese ceasefire sort of truce line, Argos, Pergos, and we were coming through that. But in fact, I can remember the villages turned out, and there was a good deal of celebration. We stopped one night, I remember, at a place called Aion, where we were fated. We were given a great banquet and considerable hospitality. Anyway, we arrived back in the area of Athens. We were given, curious, I remember this very well, I happened to be at the Brigadier's Hall over it, and otherwise. Anyway, I heard him say, you will have a general responsibility for security in the capital city.